Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We got a great show coming up today. The triumphant return to Ring of Fire of Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. She's going to be here with us to talk about the emerging Omicron variant of COVID-19 and what it means for the United States. We also have Bryce Covert, a contributing writer for The Nation magazine. She's going to give us the latest on what is happening with the $1.7 trillion Build Back Better Act. And she's going to tell us how Joe Manchin is the key to whether or not we get all of those good provisions of the bill to become a reality. And of course, we've got some pretty devastating poll numbers to talk about with regard to the 2024 presidential election. And don't forget, you can get the full Ring of Fire episode every single week. Sign up to become a member at ROFpodcast.com. You can also get exclusive video content every single day on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. You can also sign up and become a member of our YouTube community. Just click on that community tab. We've got some wonderful tiers, including access to content that is not given out to the general public. So if you want to support the show that way, that's another great way to do it. Of course, you can get us on Patreon as well. Patreon.com/TheRingOfFire. It's way too early right now to talk about 2024 presidential polling. But nevertheless, we're going to talk about 2024 presidential polling because it is important. And listen, we know right now that Donald Trump has not yet officially declared that he is running for president in 2024. But at the same time, all of his actions seem to indicate that he is absolutely running for president again in 2024. Even though Mark Meadows, who has a new book coming out next week called The Chief's Chief, he said that he does not think Trump is running again because he doesn't want to be seen as a loser. Now, I don't buy that at all. I think that is a very, very stupid argument to make because we all know that Trump is a loser. He didn't win the popular vote in 2016. He didn't win the popular vote or the electoral vote in 2020. And that has not stopped him from claiming otherwise. So the argument that, oh, he doesn't want to be seen as a loser, that's bull. He already is a loser. He knows he's a loser, but he's able to frame it in a way and convince his followers that he is, in fact, not a loser. So I don't buy into that argument. I don't think anybody else should either. I think we need to move forward acting as if Donald Trump is, in fact, running for president again. And a good indication that he is running for president again is that recently his campaign, I guess that's what we need to call it now, commissioned some polling data from states of Arizona, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And it showed that he is beating, in a head-to-head matchup, current incumbent President Joe Biden in those five key swing states, which, yes, would be enough to give him the electoral advantage in 2024. At the same time, Rasmussen, which, as we all know, is right-leaning, they put out a poll showing that nationally, Trump is beating Biden by 13 points. A 13-point gap between Trump and Biden right now. And of course, Biden has not even been president for a full year right now. And as we know, as everybody loves to tell us, these polls are going to change. And they will. This is absolutely not set in stone. But I also disagree with a lot of the journalists who tell us to ignore polls right now about the 2024 election because it is too soon. And I don't want to attack anybody, and I don't want to, you know, put myself on a pedestal by any stretch of the imagination. But that's the difference between a journalist and a political scientist. My degree, my training is in political science. We take lots of courses, by the way, on political polling. We learn how to do polls. We learn how to read and extrapolate data from the polls. And we learn how to apply that to politics, even in these far off scenarios like the 2024 presidential election. So I do not think it behooves us at all to ignore these polls or to pretend like they do not matter, because they absolutely do. I mean, this is a huge part of political science here in the United States. And to come out and say, ignore them, it's stupid, it's way too soon, that's irresponsible. Because what these polls are telling us right now is that the Democrats are in trouble. And anyone who dismisses that is doing the Democratic Party a very big disservice. Because we have to look at not just what the poll says, but what it means. And that's where the Democrats are struggling right now. We have all kinds of issues happening. You know, as I had predicted on our YouTube channel months ago, everybody's already forgotten about Afghanistan. So that's not even really an issue. Republicans wanted to make it one. They quickly abandoned that because they realized people simply didn't care long enough. So the big issues right now are the economy, inflation, which includes gas prices, which Biden has really no control over. And they're trying to frame it as Joe Biden's economy is squeezing consumers. It's a far more complex issue than that. And it does, of course, go back to Donald Trump's administration. He left a giant mess that President Biden and the Democrats, who now have majorities in the House and Senate, are trying to clean up. But it also ignores important factors like corporate greed. There was a report that came out about 2 weeks ago, I think it was, showing that corporations that are, of course, experiencing inflation are also arbitrarily raising their prices anyway. And it's because, as these corporations said, and this was an article that was in Business Insider, the corporations said this is the best time for us to just raise prices anyway. Because when prices are already going up because of inflation, we can tack on a little bit more. Inflation gets blamed for it. And then when inflation goes away and the prices drop, they don't drop back down to the original price. You know, maybe they're, depending on if it's, you know, a food item, maybe it's 10 to 15 cents more than it was originally, but it's less than it was during inflation. So people are okay with that. That happens every time we get these intense periods of rapid inflation here in the United States, and corporations know it and they take advantage of it. Their profits are through the roof this year. They aren't being affected by inflation because all of those costs are being passed on to us consumers. And then all of the blame for it gets passed on to Joe Biden and the Democrats, which is completely unfair, but it's a complicated issue. And you can't just refute that, you know, in a 3-minute MSNBC interview or with a, you know, 30-second ad. It's difficult to explain. It's hard for people to fully understand. And that's why Republicans can just come out and say, yes, it's Biden's fault. And that's all they have to say. And people are like, okay, well, he's in charge. So obviously, yes. So if inflation stays high, that's bad for the Democrats, and it sure as hell is really horrible for Joe Biden. And it gives Republicans an easy line of attack because, again, it's an issue people don't understand. So that's a big thing. The other big thing, and this is something we're going to get to later on the show with Bryce Covert, is the Build Back Better Act. We got the infrastructure bill passed. We got the infrastructure bill signed. Wonderful. Not nearly as big as it should have been. Same thing with Build Back Better. But it still would provide tangible benefits to the American public. And Joe Manchin's holding that up. Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, a handful of others are holding this up. And that is absolutely going to lead to an annihilation of the Democratic Party in next year's midterms, which are now a little under a year away. If that happens, if the Democrats lose big time in next year's midterms, Biden's chances of being reelected in 2024 go down even more. Because what happens at that point if Republicans take back the House and or the Senate? They're not going to allow Joe Biden to do anything. His entire agenda from that point forward gets derailed. Republicans will obstruct. We could have more government shutdowns just to make him look bad. And because he's already, let's be honest, not a super strong candidate anyway, not a super strong president. You know, when he goes out there and speaks, he doesn't exactly, you know, exude confidence and excitement. That's all going to hurt him. So these polls, again, they're going to change. There's going to be a time within the next year where Joe Biden's approval rating looks great, where he beats Trump in head-to-head matchups. I'm assuming. And there's also going to be times when these poll numbers are probably worse than they are right now. So we all have to sit tight, but the Democratic Party are the ones who need to be paying attention to these polls. They need to wake up and understand that the American public wants something delivered to them. And I know they're getting the infrastructure bill provides money to every single county in the United States. Every single congressional district is going to get money off of that infrastructure package, but it's not there yet. People can't see it. So once the deliverables start happening, and especially if they come with the Build Back Better Act, that's when we start to see some real change. And that's the contrast I also want to point out, because right now we do have the Democrats, minus, again, the handful of corporatists, that are trying to give something to the American public. Meanwhile, what's happening on the Republican side? Well, take a look at Florida. Last year, in the 2020 election, Florida voters went to the polls and overwhelmingly passed Amendment 2, while at the same time, by the way, voting for Donald Trump. Amendment 2 raised the Florida minimum wage over the course of many years to $15 an hour. So now, Republicans in our state legislature, which they control, have come up with a new idea, and they're working on legislation to create what is called a sub-minimum wage here in the state of Florida. So what this legislation would do is it creates this sub-minimum wage, which they're referring to as a, quote, training wage, and it would be $4.25 an hour. It's about half of what our current minimum wage is. And the legislation would allow employers to pay new hires $4.25 per hour for the first 6 months of employment. And this legislation is being pushed by Walmart here in the state. It's being pushed by Universal Studios, Universal Resorts here in Florida. They want a $4.25 wage in contrast to what the voters overwhelmingly supported last year. And this is what the loophole they're calling it. This is our loophole to get around this. Because, you know, they say, people may be reluctant to take jobs that they think are dangerous or they don't have the training for, so we're going to pay them less? Like what I just said, that was literally what they said. People are reluctant to take jobs that could be risky or dangerous or that they don't have training for. That is what they said. So the solution, instead of saying, okay, we know you don't necessarily like this job, but what if we give you $20 an hour? That would make sense. But instead, they're like, okay, we know you don't want this job. We know it could get you hurt. So what if we pay you pennies to do it? That is the kind of ass backwards reasoning that we are dealing with the Republican Party. In the state of Florida, this minimum wage increase that did get passed would lift 1.3 million households out of poverty. It would raise the wages for 2.5 million part-time and full-time workers in the state. And the Republican response has been, let's cut the minimum wage in half to a sub-minimum wage. This is going to send millions into poverty here in the state of Florida. But the silver lining on it is that this would have to be a ballot initiative. So the Republicans who are drafting this, if they pass it, it goes to the ballot. It goes to the people. So they would have to vote to make this happen, which obviously, since they just voted to increase the wages, it's unlikely they're going to vote to decrease the wages. But screwier things have happened. But I wanted to point that out just to bring up the differences in the two parties. The Democrats are working to actually give people, working class Americans, something better. The Republicans are literally working to make you earn less at your job. Now you tell me which one of those parties you want to support. It's only been a week since the Omicron variant of the coronavirus was first identified by scientists in South Africa. It quickly was identified after that in Asia and Europe, and it has now been identified here in the United States. So we have the Omicron variant here. It is going to spread. We're still already dealing with the pandemic. And of course, we have one party, the Republicans, who just want to pretend that the pandemic isn't happening and encouraging their base to not protect themselves from the virus. Joining me now to explain what's happening is a Ring of Fire favorite, Heather Digby Parton, contributing writer for Salon.com. So, Heather, we have this new variant, Omicron. They announced this last Friday. Biden came out earlier this week. He did a press conference. He told people, look, don't panic, but be cautious. You know, we're not going back to lockdowns. Everybody should get vaccinated and, you know, protect yourselves. Basically, the message we've been hearing from the administration all year. It's a good message. I'm not going to say that it's not. But then you have the Republicans, and the Republicans are doing what Republicans do. Somehow all of this is Joe Biden's massive failure that there is a new variant of COVID-19 out there. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Oh, it's completely ridiculous. And even before the Omicron variant was sort of, you know, discovered and revealed, there had been this new, you know, sort of meme building on the right because there have been more deaths in the calendar year of 2021 than there were in 2020. And although we don't really even know that's true because the counting and, you know, during 2020 was a little dicey, but nonetheless, just accepting what the official version is, more people have died in 2021 than died in 2020. And of course, just, you know, putting right up front, that's a completely fatuous sort of observation since the virus didn't even take off until April of 2020 and was peaking at the moment with, you know, in the worst peak that we've had so far at the moment when Biden took office in at the end of January of 2021. So it's not a fair comparison. But nonetheless, this had become a big thing. Trump was putting out statements and saying, look, you know, he's failing, and the Republicans were running with that he had failed and he did all the wrong thing. Now, you know, the Wall Street Journal editorial board, of course, as they are wont to do, came out with an editorial excoriating Biden for this. And, you know, this is just, you know, it's a typical Republican trick. This isn't something unprecedented. Normally they do it with, you know, when they leave office, leaving the country in shambles as they usually do, leaving the Democrats to come in and pick up the pieces. They then sabotage whatever the efforts are to kind of fix things and then blame the Democrats for failing to fulfill their promise, right? I mean, that's just a very, right, very neat little political trick that they have. Now, it's never been so deadly before. This is unbelievable because the things that they're doing now to sabotage Biden are having the effect of killing massive numbers of people, literally killing them, most of them their own supporters, which, you know, I continue to, my mind boggles at that. But that's where we are. And this has taken off. And I don't think we're going to see the end of it. In fact, after I wrote a piece for Salon this week, on this subject. And just after I wrote it, more things came tumbling out. They have, judges who are now reversing, Biden's vaccine mandates, saying that they're unnecessary for healthcare workers specifically in one case. They are now, they've got, you know, movements in the states to give unemployment insurance to people who refuse to, take the vaccines and then lose their jobs, which is, you know, incredibly ironic since they were the ones demanding that unemployment insurance be dropped, you know, because people weren't working. And now we have, I just read, today, that they have a movement afoot in the Congress for the Senate and the House to you know, refuse to you know, pass any legislation unless Biden reverses the vaccine mandate.
Right, with the shutdown, they're threatening we're just going
to shut
everything down if you don't reverse that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about now. I mean, there was a lot of chatter for a while about is this a strategy? Is this something that they're doing on purpose, or is it just something that sort of springs from the grassroots and they're just going along with it? It's clearly a strategy now. They're using this as a strategy, and in fact, there were reports this week of how they are literally talking about this as a way to, the Republicans are trying to, you know, appeal to the unvaccinated as a political strategy for 2022. So we're dealing with a super nihilistic, cynical Republican Party that goes even, I think this goes beyond Trump. I mean, this is something that is just, it is so grotesque in the face of the massive numbers of deaths and hospitalizations and illness, even among their own supporters. And yet, for some reason, they seem to believe that this is, you know, this is their path to back to power in Washington. And, you know, I just don't know what to say. This is like, you know, it is a very, very dark, dark political environment right now. Very, very dark.
And it really is. And, you know, I'm down here in Florida. So we've got Ron DeSantis, who has been fighting any kind of COVID protections, was one of the last states to kind of go into lockdown, was one of the first states to reopen. And so we've had it really, really horrible down here. We've had, you know, close to 70,000 people die just here in the state of Florida. And I do have to wonder the electoral strategy of that, right? Because at this point in the pandemic, as you mentioned, we're seeing red states, red counties being hit more than three times harder with COVID, a three-time higher death rate from COVID. So here in the state of Florida, where elections are always close and DeSantis is up for re-election next year, what does that do to his chances of winning? If you've just killed 40,000, because let's just say it's, you know, half and half, but say you've killed 40,000 Republican voters in a state where that's going to swing an election, you know, it makes no sense to me. He didn't have
it
to make
no
these
sense
decisions
to me either.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, this idea that they're, you know, they're literally killing their own voters. We had, you know, remember after the Virginia election just a month or so ago, everybody's going, well, it's all about the margins, right? It's all about the margins. And there's, you know, just a few votes here and there, even in rural areas, could have made the difference. Yeah, it's exactly what you're saying. I mean, you have to wonder whether or not, I mean, and these numbers are massive. 70,000 people in the state of Florida, that is a large number of people. That's not just some, you know, a couple of, you know, just a tiny percentage. I mean, that's a big number. And, you know, we've got another year of this to go through. You mentioned Omicron. We don't know what's going to happen with this new variant. We don't know how difficult it's going to be. We don't know if these anti-vaxxers are going to succeed in, you know, continuing to create mass deaths across the country with this thing. And you do have to wonder about that. And, I mean, that's not even, you know, that's just sheer cynical electoral strategy. The moral implications of this are, you know, monumental. And I don't, you know, I guess they just don't care. I mean, I guess they just don't care. They seem to not have any concern over this at all, including the fact that their own people are the ones who are dying.
And that's fine.
In fact, they're going to pay them to continue.
Yeah,
to die.
Exactly. And, you know, they're going to see how this does play out, obviously, in the midterms, because we'll be honest, as it stands right now, Republicans are poised to make some pretty big gains,
sure,
you know, in the midterms. But that's not necessarily taking into account how many of their voters are dead and dying. We have 40% of the Republican Party right now that says, I'm not getting vaccinated. You only have 10% of the Democratic Party with the same thing. So that's a huge discrepancy, especially with the new Omicron variant, because it's only been 6 months since Delta was identified. And so we're looking at potentially before the midterms, at least what, two more variants that could easily pop up if we stay on this same schedule, which is horrifying to think about. But it's a very likely probability at this point, considering the fact that in many of these countries, they're not able to get the vaccines. We haven't done enough yet. And I know Biden did come out on Friday when they were talking about this. And he said, look, I'm going to encourage the World Trade Organization, world leaders, let's give the patent waivers out there so we can get vaccines to these countries. But then the World Trade Organization has to cancel their meeting because COVID's so bad. So we can't even fix COVID because COVID is so bad. That's how horrifying this whole thing is here. And so we're stuck with this. This will be a big factor in the midterms, I believe. And I think a lot of it's going to have to do with how it impacts turnout, because there won't be people to turn out.
Well, that's right. You know, and let's also, you know, look at, I mean, this is a bit of a digression, but it's all part of the same thing, which is that they're working overtime to restrict voting around the country and to, you know, to basically, you know, sabotage voting. And one of the big problems was that they, or one of their big issues over this is that, you know, states change the voting rules in order to accommodate COVID. And they want to change them back. They say this is just that it was a temporary thing, it was wrong to begin with, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they had massive turnout in 2020. They just didn't have enough. But they did have good turnout. And what they're potentially going to do if they reverse all of these COVID, you know, enacted election rules is they're going to reduce their own turnout. And not just from the fact that a lot of their voters will unfortunately be dead, but also because it's going to be very difficult for them to vote. And you know, a lot of this does seem like it's shooting themselves in the foot. I mean, as you say, it's not looking good for the Democrats for other reasons, including just the structural reason that this is common, that happens after, you know, in midterms like this. And, that you know, there are reasons that go beyond just the current circumstances. But nonetheless, you know, I don't know that they're actually making it easier for themselves in a number of ways, or at the very least, all the things that they're doing to attempt to, you know, sort of sabotage the Democrats' electoral prospects in 2022 and 2024, that they're not going to be balanced out by the things that they're doing to restrict their own voters and to reduce their own voting pool. I mean, it doesn't seem to me to be very well thought out. But then, you know, we're talking about the Republicans here. So,
Well, and you know, I hate to bring it back to Florida again, but we're one of the states, you know, that did pass these voter suppression rules. And one of them was limiting who is allowed to vote by mail. And even as the Republicans in this state were passing that, they were still openly fretting about, oh, my God, we have at least a third of our voting base here in Florida that votes by mail that could easily be cut off by this. So we're sinking the ship we're working on just to spite the captain. We know it's going to screw us over and we're going to do it anyway because we think we're holding out this hope that it's somehow going to impact the Democrats more than it is us. And so they're disenfranchising their own base. They're killing off their own base. And it's not just that the politicians, the Republican politicians, are killing their base. Fox News is killing their audience. Newsmax, One America, killing their audience. How is any of this a sustainable practice? We know it is very obvious that COVID is not a hoax. It's not a media hyped up thing. This is the real deal. And yet they still downplay it. They still tell us masks don't work. The vaccines don't work. And what's really horrifying is we're starting to see more and more prominent individuals, you know, your Joe Rogans, your Aaron Rodgers people saying like, no, I don't need the vaccines. I'm going to take the kitchen sink. And it does. People need to understand that those people have so much influence over the public, their fans, whoever it is, that's also having an impact as well. And we're just going to continue to see more variants emerge faster than medicine can keep up with. You know, just this week, the COVID treatment pill that Pfizer's been working on, you know, the FDA is voting on it. And Pfizer's already come out and said, listen, we don't know now if this is actually going to work against Omicron. So we're going to go back at it and we're going to have to try. Hopefully we can get out in 3 months, they said, but to come up with a treatment for that one. And so they're behind the curve. And if we keep this up, we're always going to be behind that curve. And there comes a point where you have to ask the Republicans and all these other idiots out there, and I'll call them that because they are, how many deaths is finally too many? How many more people die before you say, okay, you know what, let's stop being stupid for a minute so we can get through this? I don't know that there is a number for some of these folks.
I don't either. I mean, I would have thought, I think we all would have thought that, you know, we're hovering at 800,000 right now in the U.S., 5 million worldwide and counting. I would have thought that was a number that was so horrific. I mean, this is just in you know, a year and a half, and that many deaths, unnecessary deaths, that they would have, you know, that would have sobered them up. It didn't. They're doubling down. And as you say, one of the most horrifying aspects of this is the fact that it's sort of permeating into popular culture in a way that's very scary to me. The Aaron Rodgers situation was a good example of that. You know, he's not a political person, or he wasn't. I mean, apparently he is now. But, you know, and Joe Rogan, and where those kinds of things go, that hits different sort of demographics. That hits, you know, kind of young people, people who are apolitical, people who are, you know, who are not really, you know, informed on a, you know, sort of a political level, or even on a you know a public health level, that, you know, that they get the idea that this is okay. That things like, you know, I mean, Aaron Rodgers talked about, you know, taking, you know, ivermectin and things like that, and that kind of stuff getting into, you know, outside of these sort of circles of Facebook political junkies and conspiracy theorists is very scary, because that's how these variants take hold, right? I mean, that's the whole point of this. I mean, of course, we should be vaccinated for our own sake and our family's sake, and we should be vaccinated for the sake of the community to keep from, you know, spreading the virus to people, you know, who are vulnerable and have immunocompromised systems and things like that. But it's also because we don't want to provide a petri dish for these variants to grow, and that is what happens when you have large unvaccinated population, is that they get into that population, and that's when these variants emerge. I mean, that's probably what's happened with Omicron, you know, that it happened somewhere out there. With, you know, at first they thought it started in South Africa, but that's not actually been validated, and there's some evidence now that it didn't. But whatever it was, it happened in an unvaccinated person, potentially in an unvaccinated immunocompromised person. That is why, you know, you want to get everybody vaccinated. It's going to be hard enough to deal with this thing. You know, if there are breakthrough infections, and if there are, you know, situations in which these things kind of get a hold in the community anyway. But if you're vaccinated, you're not providing this host, you know, these massive numbers of hosts for these variants to emerge. It's insane for any civilized country, or any country, civilized or otherwise, to do this. And the fact that the Republicans, that the party itself, that the establishment, this isn't just coming from some fringe people. It's not Alex Jones here we're talking about. This is the actual Republican establishment now moving on this idea of using the unvaccinated as a political tool for them to regain power, and basically saying, don't get vaccinated. We don't want you to get vaccinated. That is, I mean, I think it's unprecedented. I really do. I think it's an unprecedented nihilistic political strategy in our country. I don't know that anybody's ever done anything quite that, you know, I mean, I guess the Southern strategy was maybe kind of up there, but that's kind of the level that we're talking about here.
Well, and we also have, because again, they announced the new variant on Friday, but on the weekend, on the Fox and Friends weekend program, they were already talking about, this is a distraction. This is so the Democrats can steal the midterm elections. And then, of course, you had Ronny Jackson, Representative Dr. Ronny Jackson. I still, you know what? I need to see the long form medical school transcripts from him, because I don't know. I have a hard time believing this man was an actual medical doctor. But either way, he's also saying,
in the White House.
Exactly. That's so scary. I mean, God. And then, of course, all the other, you know, scandals that went along with his time in the White House. But he says this is the midterm election variant. It's so they can steal the election. Nobody's trying to steal anything. What you're talking about is not wanting people to vote in large numbers, because that never works well for Republicans. But they've already weaponized this in under a week. I mean, literally in a matter of hours, weaponized
instantly.
It. Yeah. To convince these Republicans, one, you don't have to take it seriously. This is overblown by the Biden administration. And two, they're going to use it to try to steal another election. It's amazing how fast that Republican machine works. But it did, and it does, and that's going to also help to spread this thing across this country.
No doubt about it. And you raise a really good point, and I hadn't actually even thought of it, but when you mentioned it, how quickly that thing took off. It's almost reflexive now, isn't it? I mean, they don't even, there doesn't have to be any kind of talking points or anything. They just do it. And that just shows how firmly this idea of, you know, this anti-vax, anti, you know, mask, you know, anti any kind of mitigation of this, of the, of COVID, of the pandemic, has just, it's just completely permeated Republican politics. And that is now definitional for them, isn't it? I mean, this is who they are. I mean, you very rarely, in fact, there, in the beginning, you'd kind of see people coming out and saying, no, you get your vaccine. Even, you know, you had Mitch McConnell saying it, and I think the governor of West Virginia. I mean, there have been some others who were trying to kind of get outside that thing. I'm not seeing it at this point. In fact, all you're seeing coming from that side is maybe some tepid sort of, yeah, well, you could get a vaccine, but everybody's free to do what they want, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. That's the best you can hope for from them right now. And, I mean, it's killing massive numbers of people. I mean, I still just can't wrap my mind around this, that 800,000 people are dead and these people are playing politics with it. It's just, it's stunning. And I think it's going to get worse. I mean, clearly, we're seeing them laying plans now to actually take it even farther than they already have. It's unbelievable.
And one of the more terrifying things about all this, too, is how much this has validated the anti-vax movement. You know, that used to be such a tiny little fringe, and yet they had an impact. Obviously, we saw, you know, the measles outbreaks because of anti-vaxxers. But that's not fringe anymore. That is mainstream. And now, I don't know if you'd seen this story. I just, came across this earlier. We now have anti-vaxxers on conservative social media sites that are pushing these bogus ways to de-vaccinate people. They're telling them that if you do bloodletting or if that you ingest bleach, you can undo the vaccination. That's the point we're at. It's not even just anti-vax. It's now trying to de-vax people, which is going to get them killed, by the way. You cannot ingest bleach and you can't undo a vaccination. But that's the step we're at. And I worry that beyond this, you know, because sure, you've got anti-vax for COVID, but are these people going to be anti-vax for all of the other vaccines as well? You know, we could be looking at potentially massive outbreaks of other diseases as a result of more and more people becoming anti-vax during COVID here. And that scares me to death.
Well, and I think you're right. And but correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Ron DeSantis come out and say that the state would not require vaccines? And everybody wondered if he was just specifically talking about COVID or was
right.
he talking about
yeah.
any vaccines? I mean, I think that that's definitely bubbling up in the on the right, that you know no one. I mean, it's this idea. It's a new principle, which is that the government doesn't have a right to tell you to do anything. And that, which means that you don't have to vaccinate your children. I don't know. I mean, are we? You know, do we have to drive on the right side of the road? I mean, is that something that can be mandated? I mean, the government can't tell you that you can't carry your gun, your semi-automatic rifle everywhere you go. The government can't do that because, you know, they just have no right. I mean, this is becoming a full-blown philosophical kind of radical philosophy on the part of the right wing now, that the government has no right to tell any of them to do anything they don't want to do. And, you know, this is just, it is, of course, that it's not going to apply to people that aren't like them. I mean, needless to say, the government must tell, you know, the wrong people what to do, but they can't tell them what to do. And this is, it always strikes me as being so juvenile, you know. I mean, this is just, and every, of course, that's Trump, right? I mean, he brought this kind of juvenile attitude into politics, which we saw borne out over the weekend with Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene Nancy Mace having a, you know, all of them having a, you know, a little cat fight. You know, I mean, I shouldn't call it a little cat fight. It's actually quite serious, and it's horrifying. But, you know, the fact is that kind of juvenile behavior and juvenile rhetoric, that, you know, the Republicans did a lot of things before Trump came in that laid the groundwork for Trump. But that is something he personally brought to the table, this really, really childish kind of behavior and rhetoric into politics. And so you're seeing it play out in things like anti-vax or them running around burning their masks, you know. What is that? You know, they burn, having their kids burn their masks and screaming at school boards about, you know, kids having to wear masks. I mean, kids are told they have to do all kinds of things. They're kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, they can't be told to wear a mask because that's, you know, going against the American credo of, you know, freedom and liberty or something. So I think this is not going to be the end of it. I think we're going to see a whole lot of things kind of falling out of this that are going to be very difficult to counter because these people are feeling their oats.
Well, you know, and those of us who've been doing this, you know, the kind of political reporting and all of that for so many years, we always knew there was a fraction of the country that was a little bit nutty, to put it mildly. But I think what happened with this pandemic is it exposed the fact that that small fraction is actually much bigger than any of us could have imagined. And that really is one of the most disappointing things of all of this, is just realizing and looking around. And we see it with coworkers. We see it with family members. We see it with friends. Like, oh, I didn't know you were like that. I didn't know. And it is so disappointing. And it kind of, you know, to a degree, hurts your faith in humanity, hurts your faith in your family, because so many people out there making such stupid decisions based on nothing more than you can't tell me what to do.
Exactly.
It's horrible. And look, Heather Digby Parton, you've been such a wonderful part of Ring of Fire over the years, you know, with Sam. I'm honored to get the chance to talk to you today, to bring you back on the new Ring of Fire. So I hope we can do this more often. You are an absolute pleasure to talk to here. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And anytime. I had a great time. I'd do it again in a minute. Thanks.
You can get more from Heather Digby Parton on Salon.com, where she is a contributing writer. And that's all we have for this week here on Ring of Fire. But again, if you want to get the whole show, you can become a member by going to ROFpodcast.com, sign up and help support the show. And of course, you can get Ring of Fire every single day on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. We have brand new videos 7 days a week, so make sure you check that out and subscribe to that YouTube channel. You can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just go to @FarronBalanced. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I am Farron Cousins. This has been Ring of Fire. We'll talk to you next week.